This is the Pretentious Wrestling Podcast, a production of ProWrestling.net. I'm Will, he's Jake. You can follow us on Twitter at @itswilltime and at @BarnettJake. On today's show, WWE's successes, both with Becky Lynch and with Mauro Ranallo. So Jake, this is a week where I don't have a ton of positive things in wrestling, and if we were doing the old countdown format, I would have struggled to come up with five, especially given the SmackDown spoilers that we've now seen that have made me quite sad. But in all of that, there is something WWE is doing spectacularly well, and it makes me really happy, and that is the push of Becky Lynch. She is really developing well as a character. She seems to be coming into her own, and the passion and intensity that she showed on Raw on Monday night were just delightful.
I agree. I think it goes to show you what a little bit of character development can do for someone who seems to be languishing, because I think it wasn't that long ago that we were talking about how poorly Charlotte and Paige and Sasha and Becky were being portrayed on television. And a lot of that comes down to, you know, they were a little bit miscast at times, and they seemed to be pretty directionless in terms of character development. And maybe they made, you know, some of the wrong moves early on in that Divas Revolution, casting them in, you know, these factions, and they never really got to express themselves individually, and it sort of snowballed into this problem that they had a hard time untangling themselves from. And now they finally gotten to the point where you have a easily identifiable heel with, you know, Ric Flair adding to that, you know, with his credibility and his antics, and how that, you know, has come across as, I don't want to say it's, you know, a huge improvement over just Charlotte as a heel, because I think she's good. But I think anytime you can add star power, you know, to an act to get it off the ground, it's probably a decent idea. And now we've seen Becky, you know, sort of come into her own as really the true sympathetic babyface of the division, because that was something that they had been missing for months. And to see her, you know, successfully sort of navigate into that role has been fun to watch, because I think she is, you know, genuinely a fairly happy-go-lucky type of person if you see a lot of her interviews. And I think that's sort of coming across on the screen now, where, you know, she has a set of principles and she feels betrayed, and now she wants to get some revenge. And I think a lot of people can, at least, you know, on some level, identify with that.
Yeah, this is the first time since all of these women were called up to the main roster that we've had a sympathetic babyface in the division, that there's been someone that you actually feel for. I didn't feel for Charlotte, really, and her as a babyface always felt a little put on. I didn't really feel for Nikki, although I think Nikki Bella did an admirable job at various points of her championship reign. I didn't feel for Paige, because I wasn't supposed to. I think back and I wonder, I didn't feel for AJ Lee for the longest time because she was painted in the crazy bubble. I don't remember the last time there was a sympathetic babyface female on WWE programming, and to me that says it's long overdue, it's time, and Becky isn't who I would have expected to fit into this role. I would have expected you and I to be having this conversation about Bayley, to be honest. I kind of thought Becky was, hey, good worker, she's going to be fine, I'm not counting on much in the character department, but she'll be good. And I'm really impressed with how Becky's done. You mentioned Charlotte, too, coming into her own as a heel, and I don't think that can be underplayed. Charlotte is going out there and playing a pure heel. Charlotte is not going out there to get cheered. Charlotte is not going out there playing a winking heel. Charlotte is going out there wanting the fans to boo her out of the building. She has a little bit of an attitude. She has some swagger about her. And while I was critical of pairing her with her father originally, because it seemed like, yay, she has a dad, is part of the yay, she has a family Charlotte push, it has turned out remarkably well. The pairing with Rick is actually breathing some life into her character. I think it's adding confidence to her. It's giving her a lot. And what we have in that division right now is a pure heel up against a pure babyface with a reason to fight. Not just that they both want to be champion, which is reason enough in wrestling, but a personal issue between them. I mean, it's just basic wrestling storytelling, but I think it's the best story WWE has told with the main roster women in years.
Well, the thing I like about Charlotte and Ric Flair is that it makes sense given the context of their life. Like, Ric Flair was the world champion throughout Charlotte's childhood, and she idolized him, even though his on-screen character was a total asshole. And, you know, given that this is sort of a nudge-nudge, wink-wink, kayfabe wrestling environment, it makes sense for the daughter of the heel to grow up thinking that that's how a champion is supposed to act and that she is superior because of her lineage. And, you know, all of that you can rationalize as a heel. I think WWE gets a little bit too cute sometimes with heels where, you know, they're going for cheers and, you know, they seem a little bit too self-aware. And I think with Charlotte, she's playing up her delusion exceptionally well. And to Becky, you know, it seems like a total betrayal because that's not, you know, the person she once knew. But now that her dad came back into her life and she's on the main roster, you know, she's sort of being infected by, you know, this sort of, this is what it means to be a champion because this is how, you know, the Flairs are supposed to act and supposed to be. And so I kind of like the story, and I like the way that, you know, Charlotte sort of embracing her lineage has sort of led to Becky rising up in challenge to it. And so I think it's working very well for them. And hopefully, you know, once they come to the conclusion of this feud and they have to work somebody in, both of them can go and take, you know, the credibility they built up for themselves in this feud and sort of spread it around the division, because I think they're not really going to have a lot of success with the women's division until they can have two or three successful feuds going at one time.
Yes, and that takes a lot of time to build. And this is something, this is really what I was hoping WWE would do when they called up the women from NXT, not decide it's a revolution and everything changes overnight, because that's not how you change storytelling in WWE. It's too big, there's too much momentum, you have to adjust fans to what you're doing. But what they've done is say, okay, well, you know, yeah, we're going to have longer matches, and that's originally, it seemed to be originally, all the Divas Revolution was, longer matches, and hey, we're going to have two matches a night on Raw now. And now we're seeing, well, fewer matches per night on Raw, but we're also seeing better characters, we're seeing better storytelling, and I will say, with Charlotte and Becky, we're seeing better matches. The Charlotte versus Becky matches, the matches they've had, they've been better than just about anything else on WWE main roster television, including things Sasha Banks has been involved in, which I know we've praised Sasha a lot on this show, but that's worth noting too. And I believe Sasha is out with an injury, as reported by Dave Meltzer, I think disputed by Sasha. There's some craziness there, but Sasha's out for a little bit right now, but we do have some solid main roster work happening.
Yeah, I think their match on SmackDown might be my favorite women's match that I've seen since the call up to the main roster. And I think it's because it's the most complete match that I saw from any two combinations of women that they've put together in recent months. You know, they had the right kind of story, they had a very good match, and they had a finish that, while it wasn't, you know, clean in the sense that there was some interference, it forwarded the story in a way that kept you intrigued and kept you wanting to follow up and watch. I think they've, you know, like, they had an okay, you know, feud going between Nikki and Charlotte, but their matches oftentimes were a train wreck. So was the feud in terms of, you know, what we saw on screen with promos. And so I think this is the first time they've gotten all of the elements together and made them work, because they've had bits and pieces of it in the past, and it just hasn't all come together at the same time. And so I'm optimistic about seeing these two in a long form match. I know, you know, some people were down on the Charlotte and Sasha match that happened a couple of weeks ago, and I think that's the one where Sasha ended up disappearing off of TV. I don't know if she took a bad bump or what happened, but they kind of started off slow and built to what I thought was a fairly satisfying finish. And I think the match last Thursday on SmackDown was in the same boat, where they kind of started off methodically, and then by mid-match you could tell that the story they were telling was starting to grab people, because there were actually some fairly vocal Becky chants in the crowd. And then they worked towards what I thought was a very good finish. And so I'm really looking forward to seeing where they go with it. And it's hard not to mention Mauro Ranallo, because I think his commentary and giving context to Becky as a character and talking up, Charlotte and her accomplishments in NXT, and how, she's modeling her career after her father's, and that whole, he added a lot of detail that I think WWE's previous announced crews failed to really bring to the table. And I think that added a lot to the match for me too.
You know, Jake, I'm usually the guy that moves us on from subject to subject.
Yeah.
And I'm actually feeling a little threatened right now. Can you just host this show without me? Like, is this... Can I just sit back and coast?
We can switch it up if you'd like, sure.
Ooh, I might take you up on that sometime. That is our next topic, though, is talking about Mauro Ranallo on SmackDown, because he was great. He was Mauro. That was the best thing I can say about it, because everyone knew going into this, Mauro Ranallo is a great commentator. You and I have raved about his work on the New Japan on AXS show, and rightfully so. He has been awesome on that show with those big match calls. Well, now we get Mauro on SmackDown, and I start wondering to myself, is he going to be as good? Is he going to be distracted by the WWE method? Is he going to be a Michael Cole clone, but not as good, because Michael Cole is actually surprisingly good at things? What is Mauro Ranallo going to be? And no, he was Mauro. He was absolutely on point. I think one of the best moments, going back to this Charlotte versus Becky match, one of the best moments was him running down the history of Becky Lynch through her career and saying she's been fighting for 10 years for this opportunity, because it added so much gravity to the match. It was one of those moments that made you go, oh, wow, this is a lot bigger than this girl that I've only seen. If I only watch the main roster WWE, I've only seen this girl since July. This is so much bigger than this girl who just showed up in July getting a title shot. She's more than that. And just that little phrasing, a bit of history, makes the match seem that much more important. And that's what Mauro Ranallo brings. Make sure to check out the main page over at prowrestling.net. We always have the latest breaking news and live wrestling coverage. Today, Zach Zimmerman will have live coverage of WWE NXT. Want to help us keep producing great content? Check out ProWrestling.net membership. You obviously enjoy podcasts and insightful wrestling coverage. We have a metric cuss word ton of insight on the member side of ProWrestling.net. ProWrestling.net members get access to the ad-free version of our website, now redesigned, exclusive audio shows, including our flagship ProWrestling.net Weekly, which often features tidbits of first-run news not available elsewhere, audio reviews of every major TV show, including Raw, SmackDown, Ring of Honor, TNA, Lucha Underground, and NXT, access to the .net members forum with a great group of people to talk with. Guys, you can get all of this for just $5.50 a month if you take the annual option, or if you just want to try it out for Royal Rumble month, see what all the hubbub is about, check it out. It's $7.50 for a month. We would love for you to take advantage of ProWrestling.net membership during this awesome wrestling season. Also, please take the time to rate the ProWrestling.net All Access podcast on iTunes. Thanks, guys. Enjoy the rest of the show.
And it's funny because you look at the way they structured the commentary, and you have Mauro, just kind of pumping out all of this information in detail, and then you have Jerry Lawler immediately downplay it as if it doesn't matter. And that part of it kind of bugged me, because WWE has this tendency to downplay anything that has ever happened that didn't happen inside of WWE. And I think they cut off their nose to spite their face in that regard, because, Becky worked for 10 years in Japan and in the Indies in the United States and in Canada and various other places. to get to the point where she could come to WWE and have the opportunity to work for the largest wrestling organization in the world. Like, WWE shouldn't have to feel the need to piss on. Like, you don't have to punch down. Like, nobody you know, is under the impression that any other wrestling organization is a threat to WWE's global hegemony. So why do you feel the need to downplay what people did prior to when they got to the company? I think it does a disservice to the wrestlers, because you can play up their history and say, well, I worked my entire life to get here. You don't have to pretend like what they did prior to reaching WWE never happened or doesn't matter, because I think it does. And I think it allows you to tell way better stories, because you can at least acknowledge the fact these people have history prior to even reaching the company. And you can use that to your advantage in developing characters and storylines. I think they really, they fail to see how good that could be for their own benefit when they say, have Lawler go out there and poo-poo the fact that Becky Lynch spent 10 years wrestling all over the world to finally get a chance in NXT.
Yeah, it's a really weird habit WWE has in doing that, because it does make WWE seem more important when you find out someone worked for 10 years to get there. Instead of just saying, yep, well, they came up from NXT and they worked hard there and now they're here, saying, well, Becky Lynch has been all over the world. Becky Lynch is a traveled competitor. Becky Lynch has done it all. And this is what her journey has led to. It makes that seem so much more important. And you bring that up and it's kind of interesting knowing that, hey, by the end of the month, you and I might be talking about the WWE debuts of AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura and Carl Anderson and Doc Gallows. We may be talking about that, or we will be talking about that probably in the next 3 months at least. How are they going to talk about them? Especially AJ, I think, is the interesting one, because I get WWE not saying TNA. At the same time, you can say he's been on the national wrestling scene for a long time, right? Like, you can at least make it sound like that, because, like you said, WWE doesn't need to punch down and pretend these companies don't exist. They can acknowledge them, and I don't even mind them using the term minor leagues in describing them when they talk about WWE as the majors. I just think acknowledging that career is important. And another note on Mauro, I guess. What did you think of Jerry Lawler kind of playing the antagonist a little bit? Do you think Lawler was told to, or do you think it's something that Lawler just kind of fell into because, hey, he was in there with a straight man calling matches, and that's what he's used to. That's where he defaults. When he wants to be himself on commentary, he defaults to the heel perspective.
I'm not sure which one is which. I guess I like the end result in a lot of cases. I think there's clearly, like in the instance of downplaying Becky Lynch's previous experience, there's obviously things that he was probably told to say. But for the most part, I like Jerry Lawler with an edge. I think Lawler has a lot of wrestling knowledge, and he plays a buffoon on commentary, purposefully, because that's just the character that he's always been. But I don't think he's a, he lacks intelligence or wit or anything. No. As a human being. And so I like him when he's able to showcase, some of his wrestling knowledge and his ring psychology and things like that, because when he has somebody like Mauro to bounce off of, who is clearly passionate about pro wrestling and is willing to pump up what kind of effort a babyface is giving in the ring and how they're fighting against unfair odds, and I think Mauro did that very well for both Dean Ambrose and for Becky Lynch on SmackDown, and Kalisto too in his match with Del Rio. That Lawler was sort of able to fall back into a more familiar role, and whether that was by design or by accident, I guess is I don't know. But maybe it's not as important as the fact as it seemed to work, and then they got instant chemistry that I wasn't sure that they were going to have.
Yeah. And what did you think of Byron Saxton, who was the third man there? He seemed to be Jason, I believe, in his review discussed Byron almost seeming like a security blanket for Mauro. Like, Byron can do the hard reads. He can plug the Twitter. Byron could kind of be an outlet where Mauro might not be used to doing a lot of the WWE things. Do you think that's all it was? Or do you think the WWE really wants a chemistry there between those three?
I mean, the way it came across to me was a little bit more like Jason described, which was that they had Byron out there. I mean, and it wasn't just that he was doing the plugs and the hard copy reads and things like that, but he definitely added something to the dynamic. It's just that he's so understated that I think he fits better as the third man, because you know, we saw when he was out there doing commentary by himself, you know, on that episode of Raw where he just died 1,000 deaths and didn't have enough to say to fill the airtime, and it was just awful. That, you know, he's not going to be a play-by-play guy, and he probably doesn't have enough to say to be a color guy. But if he can say a couple of words or sentences throughout a match and then, you know, read hard copy because he's, you know, he's somewhat polished in that regard, I think it's fine. You know, if it's okay to have a third man on the announce team if they're not trying to talk over the other two all the time. And Byron seems very comfortable being, you know, the guy who only says a few words here and there.
Yeah. He seems kind of comfortable in that role of being the additional guy. I think Byron does fine on NXT. He was awful that one night on Raw, and he is pretty all right on Raw most of the time. I mean, inoffensive at the most, you know, the most I can say is, well, he doesn't actively make me angry. So there's that. I will actually be really interested to see by WrestleMania time who the announcers are for that WrestleMania show, because God willing, we're going to get Mauro on those big matches, right? Like, we need Mauro calling big matches. What's your prediction? I guess this is an early one. What's your prediction for the WrestleMania announce team?
I wouldn't be shocked to see them split up the work. I don't know if we'll have like a bunch of guys out there at the same time, but I could see them splitting it up between the Raw and SmackDown announce teams. Like, you know, you have Cole and JBL out there for a few matches, and then you switch it up with Mauro and Lawler, because I think they have enough chemistry between those two teams that they could possibly, you know, split up the work and have it be, you know, have different people give a different feel to different matches. Because I think they need to do, and maybe that'll be at the Rumble too, I'm not sure, but I think they do need to kind of go through a dry run with different announced teams to find out which is the better fit for pay-per-view matches. I think Mauro is probably a better big match announcer than Michael Cole, but I think Cole probably does a lot of the WWE things better in terms of, you know, being able to fit a lot of information into a short period of time, because he does the hard reads, he does the plugs, he, you know, he picks his spots during matches to sort of, you know, change the subject on commentary into something else if it gets too boring. You know,
is a great guy for chin locks.
Yeah, he is. I mean, he'll take a pause in a match and find a different subject to talk about for 30 seconds while the wrestlers recover. You know, he has a different cadence and a different set of priorities than Mauro does on commentary, and I think that might fit better for WWE's efforts to brand everything and stuff. So I wouldn't expect Mauro to take over on anything anytime soon, but maybe, you know, if there's a particular big match where guys request him, then he might get that opportunity.
Yeah, and that would be great to see. Well, that's going to wrap it up for today, Jake, and I will talk to you again soon. Thank you for listening to this ProWrestling.net podcast. For more, make sure to subscribe to the show on iTunes, hit us up with a rating, and tell your friends. Also, please check out the goodness of ProWrestling.net membership. Bye!